Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast with your host, Chris Ruggiero.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We're here with Lee Terbosik, a comedian and magician from Pittsburgh. We get into some interesting stuff like creating videos for YouTube and Instagram and performing for celebrities. You should go check out some of the cool stuff he's doing and follow him on Instagram. He's at Lee Terbosik. And as always, follow me on Instagram at One Man Variety. I met Lee a couple years ago because we both perform at colleges. He was a cool dude and we pretty much became friends instantly. I wanted to catch up with him to see what he's been up to, so here it is.
I've been working a lot on my Anything Is Possible videos.
I think you've seen them. For Instagram.
I started off putting them on Instagram just as like a new, just a different format, you know what I mean? Like, there were people doing Vine, and Vine got really, really popular. But obviously it uses trick video, you know, you're using stop motion, and there's been a couple guys on there that had come up with some really clever stuff, but obviously using the app, you know, using the start and stop button and creating the videos that way. So I just wanted to do something a little bit different than Vine. I hated that it was 6 seconds because I don't think it's enough time. But I thought Instagram, being that it was 15, I could do something unique on Instagram. Having 15 seconds and there not being any trick photography. It'd literally just be like, you know, sleight of hand or, you know, different magic tricks, and just putting them into a context where it worked. You know, like me going to a hardware store and me doing stuff with like nuts and bolts, or me doing stuff with a light bulb or stuff like that.
Cool. You said you kind of started on Instagram. Now you're switching over to YouTube.
It's still on Instagram, but I just recently took all the videos that I filmed. I filmed over 20, and I re-edited them. Because when I'm putting them on Instagram, like, I'm making them, you know, in that little box. You know what I mean? Yeah. That 3x4 box. So they're not widescreen, and I'm obviously speeding them up a little bit, the video, just so I can get everything in that 15 seconds. So it's kind of a challenge. So what I did is I just recently, just this is within the last week, I took all the videos and I went through every single one of them and I made them all widescreen. I put them all at the original speed, and you know, I changed, you know, I just kind of like just made them for, and put them all, and so if those who check this out, the Anything Is Possible videos are, they're broken into three parts. So there's like the where and the what, and then there's the two tricks. So like the first video is always like me walking into a location, like walking into a hardware store, walking into Target, walking into, you know, like the Ace Hotel in New York City. And then the following two videos are the tricks that I do. So what I did is I took all three parts and I put them all together, and I just put them on YouTube, but I haven't published them yet.
Did you work on anything on Vine when that first came out?
You know what? I liked Vine when it first came out, and I did some videos, just like really quick, like funny little shorts. But literally, I think I got on Vine like the week before Instagram had video. And the minute Instagram got video, Vine kind of died. It still has its like its followers. There's still people on there. There's definitely still a crowd, but it's not as popular, I think, as it was. I don't go on Vine hardly ever.
Yeah, I was kind of...
I was late to the game.
I kind of missed it. Yeah, that was the same thing. I, like, saw right when it first came out, and I was like, oh, this is... It, like, I didn't quite see the potential.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's tough there, too, because there's so many new apps and stuff that how do you know which one to, like, commit some time to? And now, like, thinking back, I'm seeing, like, these... There's, like, a handful of people who became... Or massive now, and they're, like,
got really, really famous off of it.
Yeah, they're like turning that into other, you know, what's great about it is they're turning it into other media. They're on TV and stuff now, and it's like they were just nobodies.
The one guy I had followed early on and I knew of, and I watched him kind of blow up off of Vine, was Chris D'Elia.
Yeah.
Who was a really, really well-known, I mean, he's a well-known comedian in the comedy world, but I don't think he was as famous in pop culture. But because of Vine and his just like crazy vines that he did, he like literally got like an unbelievable. He kind of did what Dane Cook did back like when MySpace was around, you know?
Yeah.
He got that that whole subculture of followers just from that app, which was, to me, that was incredible. So we were, but in there, you know, I think I've seen some magicians use it, but like the one guy that really, who wasn't even a magician, he was just doing magic tricks, but he was using all that, like, the, you know, the trick photography, and those are what blew up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was.
And those were super creative, man. Like, I thought those were really clever, but I think he just hit a wall where, like, I think people just got sick of, like, it's like, how many different ways can he jump from one place to another?
Right. So. Yeah. That's why I kind of like your, you know, anything is possible thing, because it almost tells a little bit of a story.
Yeah, that was my idea. It was, like, to paint a picture or to tell a story using only 45 seconds, because they're chopped into three. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a challenge with me when I'm doing, you know, I've put out some, like, juggling videos and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And it's like people, there's like a very small amount of people that'll watch it, and people are like, oh, this looks awesome. Why aren't you getting, like, tons of views? And then I'm like, well, because who cares? You know, if there's no story, like, you can create the coolest looking juggling thing, but if there's not that story there. And that's actually what I'm working on, kind of a art, more on an artsy side of stuff, where there's a little bit of the spoken word
yeah.
and stuff, and adding a little bit of something to it. I'm working on a video right now, so I'm going to see how that, like, how people respond to it.
Okay. Very cool.
It should be interesting. And, I mean, so how do you get people to actually, like, we were kind of chatting about this before. It's, like, kind of a challenge now, because there's so much stuff out there. And the hardest part is, you know, once people will watch your stuff, they'll be like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The hardest part is that initial, like,
that
get
initial
them to
watch.
Click.
So I think that you got it. One of the things I always do before I put out a video is I always put out, like, a teaser photo. Like, that's kind of my little thing that I like to do, is I'll take a photo, a really unique photo, or a still out of what I shot, and I'll tease that photo, like, maybe a day before, maybe a week before, anytime within that time span. And that kind of, like, puts that little implant into people's heads that something cool, I'm going to put something cool out, and you should look for it. And so if they see the teaser photo, I think they're more inclined to actually watch the actual videos, because they've already been kind of like, what? Okay, where is Lee today? Like, he's in New York City. He's at the Ace Hotel. Okay, I gotta see this, you know, like, and that's kind of my way of just getting people to watch it.
So, going back to just you in general, you do magic shows and comedy-based magic shows.
Yeah, mostly.
And when did you start doing that, doing magic?
I got into it when I was a kid, like most magicians, got into it as a 12-year-old. Just seeing a magician when I was a kid, you know, live for the first time. You know, I do remember seeing, like, David Copperfield on TV and stuff like that, but that wasn't what did it for me. It was seeing it live. And after seeing it, I came home and I asked Mom and Dad, I said, hey, I want to learn magic tricks. Where can I learn some magic tricks at? And they, of course, they didn't know. But my mom was like, well, what if we just take you to the local library? Maybe they would have something, you know? So that's kind of how it all happened. I went to a library here in Pittsburgh called the Carnegie Library. Also founded by Andrew Carnegie, CMU. You know, he left a legacy in his city, and a lot of libraries by him. So I actually was lucky enough to go there one day when I was like 12 years old, check out some magic books, and literally like went right into them. That was like my reading material for a summer. Like, that's all I wanted to do. Because I just wanted to read these old magic books and just learn whatever I could at them. And I was learning, you know, stuff like how to palm a coin and, like, simple card tricks and stuff like that. But it was, like, those beginning stages are what, like, kind of pushed me to, like, find out that there was a magic shop in my city, you know, called the Cuckoo's Nest. And I started going there, and I would save my lunch money, like, you know, and I would try to go and buy new decks of cards and stuff, you know, and just do all that type of stuff. And before I knew it, man, I was performing in grade school, you know, I was doing it for all my classmates, and then obviously in high school, man, that's where it really started to get a little more interesting, because I then found out that people would pay me to, you know, perform. You know, I was getting booked by little restaurants. I was getting booked by organizations, and even like I was on the soccer team. So like when we have sports banquets, like they would hire me to like entertain everybody, you know, like I thought it was crazy. They paid me like $100, but at the time, you know, I thought that was awesome. You know, what other ninth graders making $100 to perform at their own sports banquet?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of how it all started, and it really just never stopped. I was able to like transition it after high school and use it as a way to literally put myself through college. So I went to Robert Morris University and was able to like, you know, pay my tuition and, you know, and do those types of things just from performing, just doing corporate events and just doing those parties around the city. And then after college, man, that's kind of when I went and got an agent. And I did mostly like early on, I would see, I grew up kind of, my biggest mentor in my city was Paul Gertner. I don't know if you're familiar with Paul. Do you know Paul Gertner?
No, not really.
Paul is a legend in the magic world. Like any magician watching this right now knows who Paul Gertner is. He's won FISM, the gold. I mean, he's won everything. He's been on Johnny Carson 3 times. Just was a legend. And being that he was in my backyard and I was a young magician, I, you know, instantly I was like, I have to know this guy. I have to become friends with him because I want to pick his brain on how he's made his career as a magician. That was like, if he did it, why can't I do it? You know? So, I was lucky enough to like, you know, really get to know him, and he kind of took me under his wing and he kind of became my mentor. And that was just a luck. That was just being that I was just happened to be in the same city, and we shared the same hometown and the same passion for the art. And you know, he kind of guided me and showed me the way of how to do trade shows, corporate events, how to write a show, all those important necessities that you need when being a professional entertainer, you know, or being a magician in this country. So I was able to take all those key things that he was teaching me and jump into the corporate market. I had early on, that's all I focused on, was just doing corporate events, doing the trade shows and doing the corporate events. And then later on, I started to do more. I was kind of late to the college scene. Like me and you were both in the College Network, but I've only been in it for, I'd been in it like in my 20s for a little bit, but not how I am right now with it, like with doing all the, you know, the APCAs and the NACAs and whatnot.
When throughout that process was a moment that you realized you could do this, you know, and make it work without having, you know, not being a hobby, but actually being a full-time professional job?
That's crazy. Because here's the thing. I can do this moment came when I was getting ready to go to college, and I had asked Paul, I asked him for advice. I said, Paul, I'm going to go to college. I want to get a degree. Mom and dad want me to get one as a backup. I had said, oh, I want to perform for a living, you know, to my parents. They thought I was crazy at first, like most parents probably would. They'd be, you know, kind of nervous for their son or daughter, being in this type of industry. And I had asked Paul for some advice, and he said, you know, he went to school when he was in college, he went for art. Now, art is, you know, a great thing for an entertainer, and so is theater. But that's the show part. That's not the business part. And he always said show business. He broke it down for me. He's like, show business is always two words, and you have to remember that, and you will never have any show without any business. He says, my advice is to go to school, go to a business school, and get the information or the education for knowing how to run a successful business. Because if you can run a successful business, you'll be able to, you know, obviously you'll be able to have a show. So I took that to heart, and I went to obviously Robert Morris, like I said, and I got a degree in marketing. So that's what my focus was on. I wanted to learn the marketing because I wanted to market myself. And I'll be honest, when I was in school, I had a lot of fun because I took all my those alternative classes that you normally would take as blow off classes. You know, I was taking theater, I was taking art, I was taking voice, I was taking movie making, I was taking TV. I was trying to learn all these little bits and pieces of the industry. You know what I mean? If I were to be on television, you know, what are the, what, you know, what are you supposed to know? You know, that type of stuff. If I were to edit a video or edit, you know, or shoot a video, I want to know how to do that. So I was, luckily my school offered these classes and I just snagged them up and tried to learn as much as I could. So that was kind of like, I would say, to answer your question, that was like kind of that moment when, you know, when Paul said, you know, you can go to school, you can learn the business side of it. And when you get out of school, you'll have, you'll be able to take your show and put it, you know, and make it into a business. That was kind of like, for me, that was the push I needed.
Where do you go now for your future? Now you're, you know, you're doing it, you're out working, performing. What's the next level for you to take your business to?
I mean, there's always those stepping stones that you want to achieve, you know, whether it be a dollar amount that you want to hit, or say it's an award that you want to get, or it's even a place that you'd like to perform. For me, I think it's just being that I'm now 32, I would say that where I want to keep going is I want to be able to not only support myself, but in the very near future, support a family. So that for me is what's important. You know, some people would be performing in Europe or touring and going to Australia. Those are long-term goals for me. I'd love to do those things. But for me, it would be able to just live a comfortable life with a family, you know, and being able to just make my living and supporting, you know, a wife and children, you know, just having fun and, you know, and bring a little joy to the world.
What's like the last couple shows in the past, you know, couple weeks or months, last couple shows that you did that were standout things for you?
Let me see here, man. I stay really busy with the, like, I'm right now, obviously, colleges aren't in full swing right now. So over the summer, I just did a really cool gig with Brooklyn Brewery. Anybody that knows, is a beer drinker, I would guess, knows who Brooklyn Brewery is. And they do a really interesting thing. And I would love to even pitch you, man, for next year. Cool. I will definitely send an email to the rep. They do a thing called MASH. It's called Brooklyn MASH. And it's a series of their week-long events that they do in different cities around the world. It's around the world. Like, they do them, they even do them in Europe. And they did one in Pittsburgh. And the one they did in Pittsburgh was called Brooklyn Ha Ha. So it's a comedy show, and they bring in two New York comedians to do the Brooklyn Ha-Ha's in each city, and they picked me as the Pittsburgh talent to be on the show, which I thought was really cool, because Pittsburgh has some unbelievably funny comics. We've got some great comedians that have come out of here. Right now, in just out of Pittsburgh, we have three comedians that are on national TV every day, all the time. Billy Gardell, who's a Pittsburgh guy, who's on Mike and Molly, I believe, on CBS. Steve Byrne, who is from Pittsburgh, he's on Sullivan and Son on TBS. And then Anthony Jeselnik, if you know who Anthony Jeselnik is. I mean, just in the last couple of years, we've had some amazing comics come out of Pittsburgh. And right now, in Pittsburgh, there are some really good, funny guys that are coming up. And for them to call and just say, hey, like, we've seen your stuff and we know who you are, and we want you to be the guy for Pittsburgh, I was flattered. And they're really unique shows. The one we did in Pittsburgh for Brooklyn Ha Ha, it was at this new location called Row House Cinema. Now, Row House Cinema, I had never heard of it, and it was in a little part of Pittsburgh, right outside the city, called Lawrenceville, which is kind of like a hipster neighborhood, like really like trendy stuff. And this place just had opened, and what it is, it's a single screen movie house, and they play all kind of really, like, really unique movies at it that you can go see for, like, you know, $8. And it's like a 75 seater, and we performed on the actual stage with the screen behind us. And it was just like a really unique location. Like, when we got there, when we were getting ready to attack, we had to wait till the movie that was playing until it was over, and they were playing Pulp Fiction, which I thought was, like, so cool. So I got to sit in there and watch Pulp Fiction until the very end, and then, you know, and then jumped up in tech, and then they brought the audience in, and everybody was drinking Brooklyn beer, and we were just having, we had a great time. It was just an awesome event.
It's cool. Do you do other local, like how do you, how much local stuff do you do, you know, nearby you?
Publicly, I do, I would say in a given year, I do probably, you know, 10, maybe 10 shows I'll do publicly. Now, not that I'm producing. If I'm producing it, I'll probably only do one big event a year. But publicly, like I'm really tight with the guys down at the Improv Comedy Club. So that's kind of like my home club that I pop into a time from time to time, and you know, and I'll jump on stage and I'm completely open to even hosting. Even though I've headlined it there, I'll host, I'll feature, I don't care. I just like getting on stage and just like having fun. So I'll jump up and I'll do a weekend occasionally with, you know, a comedian that's coming through, whoever it might be. And then we have a really, in Pittsburgh, we have a really great setup. We have a place where I would love you to come and perform. And I've thought about you a couple times. And if you're ever in Pittsburgh or if you're coming through here and you're looking to do a show, let me know, man, because I'll make a call and get you on the stage. It's called the Arcade Comedy Theater. It's a really amazing spot. These guys are fantastic. They put together such a great brand. They've only been around for 1 year, and they've won, like, they just won an award for our city paper where they were voted best, like, live comedy. It, to do that in 1 year is, like, pretty impressive. And they built it from, like, grassroots up, like, just from, like, word of mouth. And every weekend they're packed. They do sketch shows, like, sketch comedy, which is, like, there's nobody doing in this city. They do live reads of movies. Like, they take movie scripts and they cast them. Like, they did Ghostbusters, and they do some really creative stuff. But they love variety performers. They love guys like me, guys like you, who have, you know, unique talents that they can put on their stage. So I've headlined there a couple times, and I've been a part of a couple awesome shows there. So that's another one of my home clubs that I'll go to and jump on stage when I can. And I tell, you know, anytime I'm on the road, if I come across people, I always say, hey, if you're ever in Pittsburgh and you'd love to, you know, come in and perform on that stage, we will always make room for you. So nice. It's a really great spot in the city.
Yeah, that's cool to have a little bit of a home base too, where like you can go, you know, you feel comfortable about pushing stuff and trying new stuff and stuff like that. It's great to have that.
Yeah.
And have a spot that, you know, you feel like at home.
It's like a spot that you can go play. Like if you're working on a new bit or if you want to test something out, even though it could fall flat on its face, you would rather test it on an audience that like is going to be cool with it than like doing it in like a big show, like at a college or a corporate event.
Yeah. What do you have for, you know, as a magician, you know, you walk in and if people introduce you at a party or something and, you know, of course all your friends will say, oh, this is you know, he's a magician.
Yeah. Which,
what do you have?
A lot.
Yeah. It's like the novelty of it. What do you have? Do you carry anything with you to always have prepared?
I always usually have something. I'm like a Boy Scout, man. It's better to just be prepared, you know, like, because I know, and I know you probably get this a lot. One of the first things people ask you when they meet you is, what do you do? You know, it's like the most common question you can get, other than, are you married, you know, or where do you live? So what do you do? And I used to just mess with people, man. I used to tell people I was a governor's son. Like I would, because I didn't want to perform. So I would just kind of just tell people like random jobs. Like I'm a disposable lighter repairman, like crap like that. Like something made them think like, is he serious or like governor's son? Like what does that mean? Like, I don't know. So, but occasionally, yeah, I stopped doing that stuff and just stopped messing with people. I would just say I'm a magician, you know? And people at that point still think you're lying, you know?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that what you do for a living? And I'm just like, yeah, that's what I do. Like I'm a magician. I travel all over the country, do corporate events in colleges. That's my thing. And that's what's, so when I have to do that, initially they're going to say they want to see something, you know, or can you do something? And so I just rather be prepared. So I always have like, you know, something in my wallet, or, you know, I'll have something if I have a deck of cards, I'll do something for them at all times. I love performing, so it's like not a big thing for me. But
and it's the one time that you don't have something in your pocket that that you actually want to do something or something, and you want to show somebody something. It's that one time that you're probably unprepared.
Yeah, works. Dude, I've had it occasionally, and what I would sometimes go into is I would go into like my one go to effect or trick is if I have nothing else on me. I don't have the deck of cards, I got nothing in my wallet or, you know, whatever. If I was stranded somewhere and I had nothing, I would do an equivoque. Are you familiar with equivoque?
Yeah.
It's more or less
listening to this aren't though.
What's it? Yeah.
So he probably shouldn't tell them.
Cause then you'll, not. Yeah.
Cause then you'll be at a party and you won't have anything.
But I do a version of that. And
so you're prepared to do something even if you have nothing. We'll leave it at that.
And I have a really cool ending for it. So
for the non-magicians out there.
Yeah.
Which there's probably a lot of them.
We're using fancy words.
Yeah, to make it sound more interesting.
We have our own language, though. It's really funny.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's always funny talking to, same thing if you're, like, at somewhere and you do meet somebody else that's, like, a performer, even especially, like, a magician or variety performer. You'll get into, like, a conversation that'll surely scare away everyone else at the party. You know, they just start talking about all kinds of nonsense that, you know, seems interesting to us. And then
Yeah, we love that stuff. But to anybody else, they're just like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with this.
You know.
What, where else, what's the coolest place you've gotten to travel because of, you know, magic?
I got to go... I've never really gone international. I've never done anything overseas or anything like fancy cool like that. But I would say in the country, just getting to see a lot of the United States has been a blast. You know, I got to perform in New Orleans shortly after Katrina. That was really crazy to go down there and have the client, you know, more or less drive me around and just show me what had happened. And I was just like kind of blown away. That was really wild. Performing in LA, you know, I get out there occasionally. I go out usually every year in September, and I perform at a golf outing, a corporate charity event golf outing. But it's for Robbie Krieger of The Doors.
Wow.
And anybody that's a fan of The Doors knows who Robbie Krieger is. And that's one of my favorite gigs I get to do every year because it is just, it's a star-studded affair, tons of celebrities, and you just don't know who you're going to meet or who you're going to run into. And I, as a kid growing up, I grew up like not, even though I was past that time period, that generation of the 70s, I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, but I loved like listening to like LA Woman and like, you know, I loved some of the Doors songs, and so getting a chance to like say I can go out and like hang out with like Robbie Krieger for a day or two, and just like who is like rock history, you know. I always thought that was super cool, and then he has me perform at his event, which is even like so surreal to me. And then one of my other favorite gigs that I got to do, I did last year on my birthday. I was in Chicago, and I performed on the 102nd floor of the Willis Tower. Most people don't know about what the Willis Tower is. It's originally called the Sears Tower. So I got to go up and have the entire Chicago skyline. It was a corporate event, and I had the entire Chicago skyline as my backdrop, which was amazing. So that was pretty cool. So yeah, I get to just like most guys, you know, we get these really unique gigs occasionally that you know really like you want are unforgettable.
Yeah. What you know, that's something that you get to experience all these, you know, amazing things, like those moments. There's like these moments that you'll remember forever, like, you know, performing something like that, seeing that skyline there and stuff. What about for the people that you perform for? What is your goal? What do you want them to walk away with after your show?
So my biggest thing has always been is that I just want people to walk away after seeing me perform. I just want them to have a different outlook on what a magician is. because and we fight it as magicians. We fight the stereotype all the time that it's for kids, that it's kind of dorky. My biggest thing is I just want to make magic look cool, and I want people to dig what I do, and put it on like a, you know, just a fun, interesting platform. And I would say, like, you know, we've all seen bad magic. You know, it's out there. It exists. I mean, you can go on YouTube and find tons of examples. So that's why, like, anytime I do a video or like an Anything Is Possible video, like my whole intention is just to make what I'm doing look cool. That's it. I just want it to be awesome and people to dig it. So,
yeah. And that is always a challenge. Do you find that what's your hardest type of person to, you know, win over, you know, because you talk about doing college shows and then corporate events as well. Like, you know, I do colleges and sometimes it's the same thing where, you know, college audience is hard because a lot of the kids are like trying to be cool. And
they are,
you know,
yeah.
And then you say, hey, you want to come to this? Like, you know, for me, it might even be worse because I have to say a juggling show.
You've kind of taken the idea of making it look cool also. I mean,
yeah.
Billing yourself as a one man variety performer, you've put juggling and everything else you do into a ball, and you've definitely made it look awesome. And I've seen your promo, man. It's you do it, you get it. Like most guys, I would say you can see all the performers that are out there, and some guys get it and some guys don't. And you're definitely one of the dudes that get it. You know, you know how to market yourself and make it look interesting and appealing to an audience.
Yeah, it's quite a challenge sometimes. Do you do teasers on campus?
Yeah, that's always a big thing. They're like the one thing you don't want to do, but you know if you do it, you're gonna like double your audience.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like they are a pain because you're. You got to go to this, you know, crappy cafeteria, and you got to go walk around or meet, you know. But I mean, honestly, dude, like, it's like not the most like glamorous thing, but like, at the end of the day, when you do your show and you have all these kids that come out and they follow you on Twitter and they follow you on Instagram, like that's what makes it like important. You know, it's something you definitely have to do because it's just going to help your show.
Yeah. What being you know, what we do gets, you know, we have to travel a lot.
Oh yeah.
What are some probably challenges? What's the worst travel experience that you've had to deal with?
I've been lucky, man, over the last quite a few years. I never really had anything stolen. I never had my bags lost, knock on wood. They've always arrived. I've had a couple times where I do know this, traveling as a magician is a pain because I have a stack of those TSA slips.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get them. I get them. That just means your bag was searched.
Yeah.
I keep all of them. I have a stack of them. My bag gets searched every time I fly. So I used to leave a note in my bag that said, "Dear Mr. TSA agent, please be kind to my props. You know, don't kill the dove. ... Haha, there's no dove. You know, like there's no live birds." I used to staple a $5 bill and just say, "Here's a tip. You know, please be gentle." And I believe it or not, dude, that $5 bill has disappeared a few times. They have taken it. So yeah, traveling is definitely one of the hardest things, I think, in this day and age, post 9/11, with our props. I've heard stories of guys that would go through that used to take their birds because they charge quite a bit of money to fly a bird, you know, to check a bird.
Yeah.
It's like 25 or 50 bucks per bird. I've heard stories of guys that do bird acts that like would literally load themselves up with their birds and they would go through with a metal detector and then they would put them in their carry on. Like I've heard like guys have done that. I lucky enough, I'm not I don't use animals in my acts. So I never had to worry about that. But there's definitely a few things in my bag I know that set off the alarms.
Yeah.
I do a trick called Triple Dilemma. It's actually one of Paul's called Paul Gertner's effects. It's with this gigantic dice. It's a big dice that I would make appear at the end. That is something that I think, just because of the size of it and like the density of it being a gigantic dice, that the machine usually freaks out over. I had one incident about maybe going back maybe 10 years ago, where I was going out to Los Angeles to perform for a couple, like I was going to be out there for a while, like a month or maybe 6 weeks. So what I did is I took a whole bunch of decks of cards, because I had had them, and I didn't want to have to buy them out while I was out there, and I put them in Crown Royal bags. So I had about, I think, two or three Crown Royal bags with maybe 10 or 12 decks of cards in each one, and I wrapped them with rubber bands. And I put them in my carry-on luggage, and as it was going through the scanner, they kind of like started to wig out. And I was like, hey, you know, what's wrong? And they detained me. They took me to the side. Well, apparently they then shut down like all security lines for like a solid 15, 20 minutes, because they thought that those bricks of cards were bricks of C4.
Right.
So they were like freaking out. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was quite a while ago though.
They never like when you have something like that, like exactly what you said, like bricks of something. Yeah. I remember I was going to a NACA conference the one year, and I had these blocks of promo cards.
Mm.
So they're like 250 each one, so they're like about the size of a brick.
Yeah.
And there was the bag had like four of these, and they're kind of like just interspersed throughout the bag. And they were just like, they sent it through the thing, the same thing, like four times, pulled me off to the side. They're like, what are these? Because it comes up apparently, like, just even though it's like cardboard, mm-hmm. it comes up on that thing as like a very, you know,
dense
solid
material.
Thing.
Yeah, it looks dense. And the other thing is they swab it. They'll do this new swab on you. That's always like a pain, because you got to sit there and the lady's like going through your stuff and she's swabbing it. Like, and you're just like, listen, lady, I'm a magician. Here's my business card. Like, you know. I just want to get to my gig, and I want my stuff to arrive there.
So you've not had any disasters of, you know,
nothing too bad. Things. The only thing is I got to a gig once after flying, and I do the needle swallow quite often, and I don't know what happened. I know I packed all the needles and you know how to you know everything into my case, and when I got to the venue, they were all gone. So I don't know if they just took them or a magnet took them. I don't know. Something stole all my needles. So I was without all the needles. I had to go to a CVS very quickly. I had to go buy a whole bunch of needles to swallow that night. So that's about the only worst, probably one of the worst times I've had to, you know, on the fly, you know, replace something.
Yeah, that's not too bad at all. That's an easy thing. What is a, you know, you talked about the celebrity events and stuff that you get to do, and especially the one out in LA. What's one of the coolest memories that you've created because of, you know, doing a show or meeting people? Some moment that you'll be able to remember forever.
Well, I know I have a couple that have happened over the years with celebs, but most recently the thing that had happened to me that I will love, and I captured it on video, was getting to hang out with Aaron Paul.
Mm.
Do you know who Aaron Paul is? If you were a Breaking Bad fan. So I got into Breaking Bad probably in its third season, and then I was addicted. You know, I watched every episode, and then as they started to come out, fourth season, and when the fifth season got broken in half, like, I, you know, that was my, that is, will go down as my favorite show on TV. And even to this day, if it's on TV, I will watch it, because I loved every episode of that show. I thought Vince Gilligan, who wrote it and who was the brainchild of it, I thought he came up with one of the best television shows in history. So being a big Breaking Bad fan, loving Jesse Pinkman and Aaron Paul and Walter White, Cranston, when I had found out that Aaron Paul was filming a movie in Pittsburgh. I have an acting agent in Pittsburgh that I do television. So I do commercial work. Been in some television commercials. And when I'd found out about him being in Pittsburgh, I put the bug into my agent's ear. And I said, hey man, like, what do I got to do? Like, can you get me on set? And he actually was like, yo dude, even if I got you on set, you're not going to get a chance to like do anything for them, because when you're on set, they're super like, don't talk to the celebrity, don't look at them, leave alone. Don't do card tricks for a celebrity. You know, I couldn't do anything. So I was like, oh man, that sucks. Like, well, hopefully I hear about him being out in Pittsburgh. Well, Aaron Paul, he's like a super awesome dude when he goes to a city. He was tweeting like photos of places that he was at and like saying to like Pittsburgh, come hang out with me. I'm bored. Like, show me the city. And I had been out of town like doing gigs and I was so pissed. So when I was back in town and I knew he was still in Pittsburgh, I was kind of on Aaron Paul watch, you know, like trying to find out where he's going to be, because I wanted to meet the dude. And I had a friend contact me and say, hey man, like, I know he's going to be at the casino tonight. He loves to play cards. You should probably go down. And when I heard he loved to play cards, I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
So I was like, so he'd definitely love what I do. So I went to the casino and he was sitting at a table playing Hold'em. He was playing Hold'em with like just regular people at the casino. And like, I'd seen him and I was like, oh, that's awesome. He's a poker player. So I just waited and, you know, waited a little bit. And when he got done, I went up to him and said, what's up, Aaron? And he was a super cool dude, man. I did a trick for him. And I did a trick where on the side of the deck of cards, I made it spell out, yeah, bitch. Because he is that was his line from Breaking Bad, was Gatorade me, bitch. Yeah, bitch. Like, so that was his thing. So I was able to shoot a video doing the trick to him. And during it, every time it would spell out, yeah, bitch, on the side of the deck of cards, he would turn to the camera and just be like, yeah, bitch. Like, he was loving it. Like, he was like, he loved it. And I ended up taking the footage. And, oh, well, afterwards, when we were done, he was like super into talking to me. Like, I wanted to leave him alone. Like, I was like, yo, dude, you were awesome. Thank you for being a cool dude. Cause they always say like, never meet your heroes.
Yeah.
Because if he turns out to be a complete dick, you know, you've just been like let down. But he was such a nice guy. And he was like super about like, dude, you're like a real magician. Like, where do you perform? Or, you know, I'd love to come see you again. Like, he was like a really nice guy. And I even told him like, yo, if you ever want to go to the castle in LA, like, let me know. I'll put you in touch with somebody so you can get in, cause you have to know a magician. And, I gave him my card and he was just like a really nice guy. And then afterward, I put the video online and it blew up. It like got in one day, it got like almost 40,000 hits. All the news coverage in Pittsburgh picked it up and ran it on like on the radio stations, and they blogged it all and it got a lot of hits. Unfortunately though, I put the soundtrack, the Breaking Bad, if you know that intro soundtrack.
Yeah.
I put it kind of underneath it in the video, and I think it set off the YouTube monitors.
Right.
And they ripped it down. I still have the footage. I'm going to put it back up without the audio. So.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
You learned your lesson.
I learned my lesson, yeah, man.
Last time you do that.
I thought that they would just put the link to iTunes in it, you know.
Yeah,
that's what they usually do.
Yeah, maybe because it's a TV thing. The TV people weren't.
Yeah, so they ripped it down, but it's all good, man. It was such a cool opportunity just to get to meet him and hang out with him and just to see what a normal dude he is and like what a normal guy and just how much he was like more into like the magic in me than I was like. Into him, like I was like trying to leave the guy alone, like go about his business, because I'm sure he gets swamped and mobbed. And he was just like, "Yo, dude, tell me more about this magic thing. Like, dude, how do you do it? Like, how did you learn?" Like, he was just a really nice guy. So that was one of the most, probably one of the cooler things I've done in recent time.
Cool. What do you have? What advice would you give to people that want to create something awesome?
Stick with it. If you really do feel passionate about something, like I've been lucky, I think, in my life, because I wanted to be a magician as a kid, and that's, I would eat, sleep, and breathe, you know, being a magician. You know, I've heard stories of how Drew Carey, when he was coming up as a comedian, he slept in his car. He was like homeless, but he was, you know, he was so dedicated to making a living at being a comic that that's all he wanted to do. He wouldn't take any other opportunity unless it was comedy. And that's one of the things for me, like I've never had another job. I've been a magician in my entire life, and I've stuck with it, you know, in good times and bad. You know, there's been some bad times, you know, where the gigs aren't coming in, the phone's not ringing, you're kind of nervous, but I've always had the mindset that it will work out, you know. And I, you know, this is what I want to do, and I'm not going to sacrifice anything. So when I'm, you know, I wanted to create something awesome, you know, I wanted the, if I felt passionate about something, that I'm gonna see it to the end. So like when I created a show called 52 Up Close, which is an entire show, like a theater show that I ran in a theater in Pittsburgh for a week. I've done it on two occasions now. And it's an entire show dedicated to a deck of cards, you know, because that's kind of like my love, was always card tricks. And so when I told people the concept, they thought I was crazy. Like, oh, you're going to do an entire show on a deck of cards. And I really did. I did an entire 80-minute theater show based around a deck of cards. So, but you know, those are things I'll look back on, you know, 30, 40 years from now and be really, really happy that I did. So, and that's like the same thing with like doing the Anything Is Possible videos. Like, the concept at first, like, I think people are going to think this is kind of crazy, you know, 15-second Instagram magic videos, you know, what are people going to think? But, you know, they've caught on and people love them. They look forward to them now. And I get people asking me, like, if they can be a part of them, if they can help out, like, if I'd film one at their location. So it's kind of starting to, like, you know, grow, and that's what I want, so...
How do you get through those times, like when you said, you know, sometimes things are a little bit slow, maybe work's not coming in. What, you know, but you're still doing it. You know, you never, you know, a lot of people, and that's saying a lot, that, you know, because there's not a whole lot of, you know, people that persevere through it, you know.
Yeah.
And kind of make it out through the other end. How do you get through those slow times, or those times where that, I think we all have times where we think that it would be much easier to go get a real job, as they say.
I look at those times as my vacation, my time, as my break. The last 2 weeks I didn't have any gigs. I had nothing really going on my calendar. And I'd seen that because obviously July 4th, you know, there isn't a lot of stuff being booked. You know, maybe you might do an event, maybe you not. Everything that I had coming in at that time either didn't pan out or obviously I just wasn't picked for it, because that happens too. And so what I did for me was I went on like a mini vacation. I seen it as an opportunity to take a break. And I a lot of people don't know this about me, but I'm a humongous Dave Matthews fan. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I'm a big Dave fan. Always have been. And I've been to 30 Dave Matthews concerts. So that sounds like a lot. That is not a lot. I met a guy a couple weeks ago who had been to 307. That's a lot of Dave Matthews concerts.
Yeah.
I thought 30 was a lot. Like, I was like, oh my God, I've been to 30 Dave Matthews concerts. He's like, dude, I've been to 307. Yeah. So I took that opportunity as my little break, and I went on in 7 days, I went and seen Dave Matthews 4 times in 3 different cities. So I seen him in Pittsburgh. I went to Cuyahoga Falls in Ohio. And while I was in Cuyahoga Falls, I always look for unique things to do anywhere I go. Even when I'm on tour, like with you, I'm sure anytime you go to a different location or a college, you're looking for, you know, unique things to experience while you're there. I'm a big fan of that. I love like learning about those people. So when I was in Cuyahoga Falls, I just kind of researched what was around it. And one of the things that was around it was a place called Mansfield, Ohio. And Mansfield, Ohio's claim to fame was that is where the movie Shawshank Redemption was filmed. Awesome flick. If anybody's never seen Shawshank Redemption, go see that movie. I think it has the best final 45 minutes in any movie, man. That is such a great ending to a movie. And the prison that they filmed that movie in is a real place, and it's in Mansfield, Ohio. So I went there and I toured the prison, and it is like it's super awesome, creepy place, man.
Wow.
And then I went and seen Dave in Chicago for 2 nights. And when I was in Chicago, I filmed an Anything's Possible video, and I shot some stuff for WGN News, who's a national news station based out of Chicago. And you know, my friend who is a who's an anchor for the show found out that I was in Chicago and hit me up and was like, "Hey man, can we have you in to film some spots?" So went and filmed some spots at WGN that actually will air nationally, which is pretty cool. So yeah, that's kind of the thing, man. That's how, like, those, when those downtimes are going on, even though it's a downtime and I'm doing something for me, like going to see Dave Matthews 4 times, I still make it into something fun. You know, I still make it into something that I can use in the future, whether it be appearing on WGN or filming a video for Anything's Possible while I'm in that city. So that's kind of how I get through it. Just being creative, man. That's all.
Yeah, that's a kind of a that's a nice way to see it, you know, as what, you know, it's kind of typically seen as a negative thing when we're not performing, when we don't have shows or something, like 2 weeks off, we're like, oh crap, you know, what am I supposed to do? But that's kind of a nice kind of a refreshing outlook to say, oh well, this is, you know, it's okay.
Yeah,
I'll just turn this into vacation. I love that idea of just turning it into that. And creating things while you're there, like in, I forget if we talked about this with any of the other people that have been on, but this is something that I was thinking about a lot lately. When I have some time, like in these like, you know, down times, a week or two where you, you know, not really having shows booked. And did you just drop that?
Yeah, I dropped my iPad.
And those moments where you do that, where you create something, it was like when I kind of started this podcast, and I'm you know, working on some other videos and stuff to put out. And, you know, even I have so many things that I'm working on, and I find that I'll probably start advertising some of them shortly, but you'll put in this effort, this energy that you put into something, into creating that stuff. It comes back. It always comes back to me in like some other very non-related way. Like if you just sit around, like you just become stagnant. And I think the, you know, your whole, you know, presence becomes stagnant and it just sits. And then it's like, see, like crank out, like put a, even like post it, like go take a photo and like edit a cool photo and make a video, do a podcast, like whatever people, you know, like to do, you know, whatever art type thing you do. And then that just, you know, that energy and that effort that you put in, this like comes back, just tremendously pours back at you.
And I will say, man, like as me and you are both performers and we're both trying to do creative stuff and trying to be out there, people see what we do and they take notice, because I've been told by so many people, they wish that they had done what we have done. You know, we took that leap of faith and we didn't go out and, you know, we believed in our talent and we wanted to do something unique. You'd be surprised how many people totally respect that. You know, like they say, oh, I wish I had the balls to do that. You know, and when people really do find what we do, our lives, super interesting. People love, like, you know, whenever I post a photo, people always comment or send me a message and just say, hey man, like that is super awesome that you get to do that, or super jealous. And, you know, and that's that kind of that motivation, that push that when you're down or when you don't have nothing going on or you're kind of bored or you're looking for that next thing, hearing those types of comments from people is, it kind of re-triggers the reason why we do this. You know what I mean? Like,
it
really helps. So yeah, like that is such an important thing, is just whenever you're out or wherever you are, just keep, you know, trying to do interesting things and be creative and find different outlets, like with the podcast or you know, with me doing like the Anything's Possible videos. That's just my way of having fun. So and I just love that people dig it.
There it is. I'm amazed at how often the same advice comes up from almost everyone I talk to. It's always something like, just do it, or get out and create something, or don't give up. Without hesitation, Lee's wise words were, stick with it. We all suck at first. The easiest thing to do is give up when it gets tough. But think of it this way. If you give up on something, you'll just have to go start something new that you'll probably suck at. So stop sucking and stick with it.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.